Good afternoon, everybody. What's up? What's up? What's up? This is the Dr. Football Podcast. I'm Dr. Dennis Tian here with my main man, the CEO of HedgeBetter, Justin Fine. Another episode of the Dr. Football Podcast. We are in the heart of the offseason. Justin, how's it going, my man?
It's good. It's almost that time of year again, right? Starting to, you know, hear a little bit more about football, think a little bit more about football. Like, you know, summer's approaching. Yeah, man, it's good. Everything's good. How's things with you?
Things are good, man. The summer's getting fast here. We still got a long way till training camp, though. It could be, the Bruins getting eliminated yesterday. Obviously, the Celtics are making a great run. Hopefully, that'll carry us into June. And then the way the Red Sox are playing, it could be a really long, boring summer until training camp opens up in July.
No, definitely. I mean, look, the Celtics are as exciting as I can remember. Maybe, I mean, the most exciting season since that, like, you know, 07-08 team, because you just don't know what these guys are capable of. And the buzz is certainly there, right? Big win the other night, Game 7. Like you said, I even forget that the Red Sox are like playing right now, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not paying any attention to MLB.
Neither am I. It's really sad because I used to be like a huge baseball guy. And I think what happened, in my opinion, is the league just deteriorated. And so I stopped paying attention to the league. And because I stopped paying attention to the league, I stopped knowing like who the good players were, what the good stories were. And I just stopped paying attention to the Red Sox. And now I pay a little bit of attention, but when it's a year like this and they're, you know, really, frankly, a bad team so far, it's hard to even do that. It's hard to even pay a little bit of attention.
Yeah, 100%. And then Bruins obviously losing that heartbreaker, Game 7. I mean, that didn't surprise me that much. Carolina was a good team. Like the Bruins, they didn't play well there in Carolina once the whole series. The home game won every game. Home team won every game in that series. So, you know, that was unfortunate. The Celtics really saved themselves, right? Because after that blown rebound in Game 4, I believe it was, or Game 5, sorry, when they could have gone up 3-2, they put themselves in a hole. They dug themselves out. I'm really excited about this team. I think Miami's good, though, so it should be an interesting next round.
It's going to be a great series, and I think with Phoenix getting eliminated last night, the Celtics have a great chance to win a championship this year. There's no juggernaut team that you look at and say, oh, they can't be beaten or they're going to be tough to beat. Is possible for this team. So it'll be a great June, but it's a long time till training camp either way. And it's a great time of year. The weather's good. There's a million things to do. It's kind of a black hole on the sports calendar. If you think about it, you know, we got OTAs and mini camp coming up for football. There's really not a lot of real fruit that like comes out of that. And it's really kind of unfulfilling. And, you know, it's a long way till the actual preseason and training camp when there's going to be something, you know, really somewhat meaningful to talk about, especially for this team. It will be an interesting training camp for the Patriots, but there's enough stuff going on right now, Justin. So let's get into a few things that I wanted to talk about. Let's start, you know, I want to start by saying that, you know, by definition in life, if you really think about it, very few things actually end well, right? By definition, if something ends, it's usually because it's not going well, right? If things are going well, people usually tend to continue with the way things were. When things end, it's because things are getting ugly, because things aren't working, right? The marriage isn't working. The relationship isn't working. The business is failing. Someone gets sick, right? It's usually a bad ending. As I was watching Joe Judge talk today at his press conference, and Matt Patricia at his press conference, and the tone and the way that they speak. And listen, Joe Judge knows more about football than I do. I'm not an expert. I totally know these guys are skilled guys that in a greater sense really know what they're doing. But just when I watch them talk, I just get the sense that this is the ugly end of the Patriots dynasty, that this is the end. It is here. It is upon us. This whole thing with Joe Judge and Matt Patricia is just so upsetting to me, the way the Patriots are handling this. I can buy bringing back Matt Patricia and having him be a part of the process here. I can buy bringing back Joe Judge, even though they were unsuccessful head coaches. I love the idea of bringing these guys back to help with their experience as head coach, even if they failed as a head coach, to help be assistant coaches under someone like Belichick. To me, I'm okay with that. But this organizational structure, we've talked about it before, is ass backwards. And if you didn't see the comments from Joe Judge today, what he said was that no one on May 15th, no one has decided who is going to call the plays for the New England Patriots offense. What possible worst circumstances could you have for uncertainty on your offensive coaching staff? You have a second-year quarterback entering the most important year of his career, the year that will define the trajectory of his growth, okay, for the rest of his career, his second year. You have Josh McDaniels that just left. You have all kinds of new places, all kinds of new players and people coming in here. And you have no clear hierarchy on your offensive coaching staff. Justin, what do you think about Joe Judge's comments today that no one has decided who is going to be calling the plays yet? And what are the Patriots doing with this two-headed monster? And I don't know if I use that word figuratively or literally, okay, at the head coaching. I mean, Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and we don't even know who the actual OC is. Is this nuts?
It's 100% nuts. It's so ridiculous. And the Patriots continue to just seemingly get worse while everybody else seems to get better. Like, we talked about how important this year was for Mac Jones. We talked about, you know, last year Mac Jones is a rookie. You know, all the things we were looking for in the future, all the things when it came to his progression, his development as a player, you know, the next steps for him, right? These are one of those wild cards that I don't think we necessarily talked about. And this is the type of thing that can seriously hinder a young quarterback's growth in performance in the NFL. Like, this could really, 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 you know, completely derail and mess up, you know, a valuable first-round draft pick that they invested their resources in. They've clearly decided to make him the guy. And now, you know, we don't even know what's happening. And we have another, you know, another young talented kid. What's his name? I forget his name. Bailey Zapp, right? And he's supposed to be pretty good, pretty talented. And he's got no direction. He's got nothing. He's got a second-year quarterback ahead of him. What's going on?
Let me ask you this. We'll get into all that, what you just said. What are they doing, Justin? What is the point? What is the rationale of this approach? Can you see any?
No, honestly, no. Like, what?
I can't.
I really can't. Like, I'm sitting. Like, I'm not just gonna make something up just to say something. Like, I really can't see what benefit this possibly serves. This really, to me, tells me that all of the things that frustrate us as Patriots fans about Bill Belichick, it's not – we thought that there was a chance he might have been changing or getting a little, you know, in his older ways, in his final years, you know, adjusting a little bit with the league. It shows that he's not changing anything. He still wants to keep everything in-house with his old cronies that, you know, do everything his way and listen to exactly what he says. And, you know, it's just this weird kind of, like, refusal to adapt and move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Justin. And look, over the years, I mean, I've thought Bill Belichick was wrong 1,000 times. Well, he's been right. And you know, who are we to question him? But the reality is, you look at the track record the last 5 or 6 years, and it really isn't very good. And when you look at this, like, bizarre setup that they've created here, it just looks so odd and, frankly, dysfunctional. I personally can't have a hard time ascribing any logic whatsoever to what the Patriots are doing right now with this offensive coaching staff. If you said to me, Joe Judge is going to be our offensive coordinator, now, I don't know if I would like that pick, because he destroyed Daniel Jones's career, but I could say, okay, he was a head coach. He's had a lot of experience. Belichick likes him. He knows the system here because he was here before. I can at least get behind, or at least be considerate of that, even if I don't love Joe Judge as a coach. When we have Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and it's like It's like the two stooges. I mean, that's what we should call them. It's ridiculous. Like, who is going to be the person that Mac Jones can turn to when he needs something? I'll tell you who it's going to be. It's not going to be Matt Patricia, and it's not going to be Joe Judge. You know who it's going to be? It's going to be Brian Hoyer. Right, yeah. It's going to be Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
That's the only one in that room right now that Jones, I think, can really trust when he, besides maybe Belichick himself, when he has a real question about this offense. And that's a big setback. They are putting so much confidence in Mac Jones and so much on him with the way that they're doing this coaching thing. I hope they're right. I have tremendous faith in Mac Jones. I think he's going to be a terrific quarterback. I was watching some of his highlights on YouTube this weekend, and I'm like, man, this guy, he really is. He was really good. I think it's easy to lose sight of it when you consider all the circumstances. But they're putting a ton on his plate by doing this right now to him. My question to you is this going to stunt Mac Jones' growth, Justin? Or do you think he'll be able to overcome this absurd coaching structure?
Well, I don't think those are two mutually exclusive things, right? I think he can overcome it. It can still stunt his growth, right?
Like, that's a good point.
I think that can definitely still happen. I don't really see a way that it doesn't stunt his growth. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems to me like they're putting him at a disadvantage, and I just can't see how that disadvantage doesn't affect him in some way, shape, or form. Even if it's not on an every play or even every game basis, at some point that is going to come back and bite them at some point, right? In some capacity. A question I would have for you is, and this isn't anything I've heard, but it's, you know, it's just something that popped into my head. Do you think Belichick wants to be the head play caller on both sides of the ball this year, and he just wants a team around him that will that's versatile, right? They can do a little bit of both, little offense, little, like, he's got two defensive coordinators on his offensive staff right now, right? Like, do you think this guy just wants a couple people around him that, like, complement him in his coaching style and his mentality, and he just wants to be at the helm and say, hey, everybody get out of the way, everybody doubting me, like, I'm back in the reins, and I'm
not. Well, I hate to do this, but I'm going to answer your question with a question, okay? Would you feel better about this little arrangement if you knew that Belichick was calling the offensive plays? Because, to be quite frank with you, I'm not sure how much better that makes me feel that 70-year-old Bill Belichick, who is supposed to be the head coach, has to run offense, defense, special teams, everything else, make decisions on penalties, replays, whatever, all the thousands of other things a head coach is responsible. I don't know if it makes me feel great that at this point in his career, a traditionally defensive-minded coach is now going to be assuming the play-calling duties with your 22-year-old quarterback. Every time Mac Jones went to the sideline last year, who did he sit next to after every single series?
Who did he sit? What was his name? McDaniels.
Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
Now he's gone. Is Bill Belichick going to sit there and pull up the iPad and go through the things like Josh McDaniels did? I don't think so. I don't know if I find it particularly reassuring that Belichick is going to be the one, if he is the one, in fact, that's going to be calling the plays. I don't think that's a much better organizational structure. I think you need to pick a damn offensive coordinator and roll with him. Pick the best guy you got. Who do you think right now, if you could pick, Justin, who would be the person on this coaching staff amongst the available options that you think should call the plays? Because I'll give you two.
I mean, it'd be tough not to say Hoyer.
Right? Yeah, like, right. That would be one of my two. Actually, I'll give you three. I'll give you three. I'd take over Matt Patricia or what's his name there, the Giants guy. I'll give you three.
Yeah.
Okay, Judd. Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number one, I'd rather Nick Caley get a shot. Go give me the young guy. Josh McDaniels was nothing when he came in here. Okay, Bill O'Brien was nothing when he came in here. Give me Nick Caley. If Belichick likes him and he understands the system, give the young guy a shot. Why not? And then I'll tell you the third. I'd rather Mac Jones call his own damn plays than washed up, you know, goofy-ass Matt Patricia. I mean, really. I think I'd rather Mac Jones just call his own damn plays. Mac's a smart guy.
Do you think that's the plan?
I don't know. I think the only way that I can rationalize, I said to you, I can't see rationality in what they're doing. There's only one. I take that back a little. There's only one way that there's any rational reason for what this team is doing is, and that is they have so much faith in Mac Jones, both on and off the field, that he is going to blossom into an elite quarterback and a star, that they want to give him the freedom and the flexibility to run the offense his way, because they feel like in his second year, he already understands the system so well. That is the only rational, you know, thing that I can see. Now, it might not be true, but when you're scrapping for some kind of way to fit the puzzle pieces together and make sense of what you're seeing with what this team is doing, I don't know. That's the only thing I can come up with. What do you think?
I honestly really don't know what to think about the whole situation. I'd be lying if I said I did, right? Like, it to me, it's just a super weird, unorthodox situation. You know, my theory about having Bill Belichick wanting to take more of those responsibilities on himself would make a lot more sense and be a lot more comforting if he was considered like an offensive genius or was an offensive leaning coach his entire career, which, you, like you said, he's not. Or if you had a veteran quarterback, someone who's established, someone who was a certified play caller, which we don't. There's just a lot that makes me sit back and say, I just don't know how the hell this team is even as good as they were last year, let alone better than they were last year. And as a Patriots fan, I sit here and I almost have this, like, you know, the remnants of that everything will be okay feeling, that it's like, hey, no matter how things bad seem, we're still the Patriots and we're still going to figure out a way to win games and get into the playoffs and yada yada. But I'm sitting here looking at the schedule now. I don't see how that happens. I think the Patriots have like three gimme wins the entire schedule.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. You know, I sounded the warning flag in 2020. Like, I jumped off the ship of everything's going to be okay because we're the Patriots a long time ago. But I'm going to tell you, there is one way that this team is better this year than they were last year. And it is the only path for this team to be a better football team in 22. And that is Mac Jones. It is that simple. If he takes a step and he becomes a top five quarterback in his second year, like Mahomes or like a Drew Brees, someone like that at that level, then this team will be a contending team and it will be back to business as usual. It really does all come down to him. And that is partially because the sport is so quarterback driven and partially because the way that this franchise has carried itself and the decisions they've made over the last few years, the failings that they've had, the bizarre things they've done, it really just puts a tremendous amount of pressure on this guy to be an elite quarterback. And if he's not, then it's going to be an ugly year. It's going to be an ugly year. If Mac Jones is who's the quintessential Kirk Cousins than he is Drew Brees, this is going to be an ugly year. This is going to be a sub-500 year.
For sure.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can even see ways that Mac Jones could be a significantly better quarterback and the Patriots could still be a worse team. Like, this defense is in trouble. Like, don't forget, like, I think Mac Jones was able to kind of develop into his rookie year and get settled in, and those Patriots were able to be successful largely because that defense, right? They had one of the best defenses in the NFL last year for a portion of the season. Obviously, clearly fell apart the end of the year and in the playoffs, but that was the defense that got that team started and held them together through that rough stretch at the beginning of the year. This is not the same defense, in my eyes, at least, coming into this year. They've lost some key pieces. I think they have some real holes. I just don't know, even if Mac Jones is better, if this team is going to be able to perform up to, you know, the standards they did last year.
Let's talk a little about that defense, and then we're going to move on to the draft, okay?
Yeah.
What is your confidence level in this defense now that we kind of have an idea what the pieces are? I don't have a lot of confidence.
Not at all.
And I know they were good last year on paper. I think they beat up on bad teams. I think they beat up on bad teams in bad spots. I think that when they really needed stops, you look at their seven losses in the regular season last year, every single one of those losses, they almost came back to win the game. And they couldn't get a stop. When it kind of, even that game in Miami at the end of the year, I was at that game, right? They had two chances to stop Miami, to get the ball back, to get a chance to tie it, and they couldn't do it, right? So I don't have a lot of confidence. I think this defense, the term paper tiger, fits perfectly. You put them up against Sam Darnold in Carolina, and they're going to look like, you know, the 85 Bears. But you put them in a tough spot against even a half-decent offense. I mean, you know, look at that New Orleans game, right? Jameis Winston coming into your stadium. You get to within one score. You need a stop in a key spot to get the ball back so your young quarterback can have a chance to win the game. You can't get him the ball.
Yeah.
I think this defense still has major question marks. What do you think?
For sure they have major question marks. And they lost, I think. Like, if you looked at that defense and said, well, last year – Who are the main cornerstone pieces of that defense, right? It was clearly J.C. Jackson and what's his name? The defensive end, whose name is eluding me right now.
Kyle Van Noy?
No.
Judon.
Judon, right? And so, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't know. You know, we saw when Judon got hurt, or seemingly got hurt at the end of the year, how he became a different player, how that defense kind of tailed off a little bit, as so did his presence, right? And then you lose the only consistent cornerstone piece that you've seen grow, develop, and get better every year, almost every game, and that was J.C. Jackson. So, like, I don't know what you really have to hang your hat on. Like, I still think Matt Judon's very talented. I'd love to build a defense around him, but that's exactly it. What's really built around him? You have a bunch of aging veterans, a bunch of unproven guys in the secondary, a bunch of kind of low draft pick prove it guys on the line and at linebacker. Like, what are they doing?
Let me ask you this: if J.C. Jackson was still on this team, would that really significantly affect your confidence level in this defense? Would you feel much better about them even if they did have JC? Because honestly, Justin, I think they have so many holes on this defense. Like, whether it's Malcolm Butler or JC Jackson out there, I don't know if that really moves the needle much for me either way. Yeah, I think this defense has got major holes either way.
It's not that I'm feeling, you know, infinitely more confident in the Patriots as a team or their defense as a whole with J.C. Jackson there. But that's just one less thing that I have to worry about, right? Because I can wrap my head around, how, okay, you got J.C. Jackson on one end, you got Malcolm Butler on the other end, and then you got a bunch of young safeties who are good. They've shown promise. You got some complimentary depth pieces, guys like Jonathan Jones who didn't get to play most of last year. So, like, I'm feeling a little better about that defense. I still don't like our linebackers. I still think we need depth up front in the front seven. But, like, I'm feeling way better about our defense's ability to go out and maybe shut down a high-flying offense.
I don't think Jackson would have made that much a difference, just to be honest with you. Like, my concern with them is really what I think you just expressed, which is, like, their front seven is a big problem. And short of Judon and Christian Barmore, I'm not sure who else in that front seven unit you can say is reliable piece right now. And specifically, their linebacker core, I mean, they are going into the season with just question marks all up and down, you know, the roster. And they don't have one, I think, reliable linebacker besides Juwan Bentley, who I think is a great player, a good player in a sense, but he's also a role-specific player. And by the way, his role, run-stopping, you know, linebacker, two-down linebacker, is becoming less and less important in today's game, where speed in the passing game is so critical. So I think that, you know, the secondary overall is still reasonably decent between the Jackson's a big loss, of course, but, you know, they're going to have depth at corner. They got a couple young guys coming in, and they got a good safety core. It's probably one of their strong positions of strength on this whole roster. But the front seven is just an absolute, you know, mess. And they got, I mean, they're counting on a fourth fifth-round pick, Cameron McGrone, from last year to come in and be a linebacker because he was supposedly a second- and third-round talent. It's like, hey, good luck because, you know, let's hope that develops because this could be an ugly year at linebacker. Dont'a Hightower still is unsigned, I believe, right?
Yeah, he is unsigned.
Anyways, well, let's move on a little to the draft, Justin. Let's talk a little bit about the draft now, which was, I believe, almost 3+ weeks ago, the first round of the draft. And I don't know what your thoughts were about the draft, but this is what I would say with this, the pick of Strange. What's his name? What's his first
Cole
name?
Strange. Cole Strange.
Cole. I almost called him Curtis Strange. Cole Strange. Okay. The Patriots probably didn't blow that pick. Like, I like him as a player. I bet he ends up being a really good player. They didn't blow the pick, but they did blow the draft. Okay, this is what really infuriated me about this situation is they traded Shaq Mason out of here for nothing. And I know that Shaq Mason is on the decline, and I know that he's not the same player that he was a few years ago. I totally get that. He was still in the Pro Football Focus top 100 last year. So he's still a good player and he's still capable of starting. Okay. By getting rid of him, they created a giant hole on their offensive line that they were obligated to fill in this draft. And the reason they had to take Cole Strange in the first round, which was way too early, instead of the second round, which is where was the earliest he was realistically going to go, is because they couldn't afford to lose him because the guy from BC had just gone and because they needed a guard desperately to fill a gaping hole. It's exactly how you're not supposed to do the draft. Okay, drafting out of desperation. Okay, the Patriots painted themselves into a corner before the draft started. With that first round pick and taking their 95% chance that Cole Strange falls to them in the second round if they wanted to, but they couldn't do that because they traded Shaq Mason. What's your take?
So look, this guy was, I believe, projected to go like he was low mid 70s overall. Okay, that was what his projection was. The Patriots took Thornton, that wide receiver out of, what was it, Baylor?
Yeah.
They took him with the 50th pick, okay?
Yep.
They could have taken Cole Strange in the second round, and that still would have been a reach. That still would have been about an average draft position of about 20 spots higher that he was projected to go on most boards, right? I think that even if he's that good of a player, Do you risk that? Like, you gave up some good first-round talent that when you traded back, don't forget, I mean, they trade back, and then I watched some good talent, some good first-round talent go off the board in those next 6-7 picks. A couple of good wide receivers went off the board. A couple of good defensive players went off the board. We saw a few players in the secondary, a few linebackers go off the board. Those are all guys that realistically, if the way this draft shaped up, we could have gotten a key piece, you know, on defense or a first-round talent and wide receiver in the first round, and then more likely than not grabbed Cole Strange in the second round. And I just wonder if, you know, not taking that risk is a huge mistake for these guys at this point who have a lot of holes to fill and are clearly kind of needing to rebuild.
Exactly, but you don't know, and I think this was the narrative the Patriots tried to get out there. You don't know that Cole Strange is going to be there if you wait till the second round. And that's, it's a bit of a gamble if you really love the player. But it's a gamble you have to take because if you're going to play the draft, it's not – I mean, look, you could make the argument, and maybe this is the right approach, that all that matters is if the players are good players. You know, 5 years from now, no one's going to care whether you took Strange in the second round or the first round or the third round. And that's probably true. Okay, but it just strikes me as just a terrible mismanagement of resources. And let's not forget that this team, we just talked about how many holes there are on this defense and how many holes there are on this offense. And now we're gonna pass up the chance to fill one of those holes by taking a guy in the first round that should have been taken in the third round. But we were afraid to wait until the second round because if we lost him, you know, our young quarterback's going to end up with a broken shoulder in week four. I mean, and oh, by the way, I even question the logic of that, because the other thing about this guy, and I think he's going to be an excellent player, is he's an FBS player. So now we're counting on this guy to come in and fill a hole right away when he's never even played Division I college football.
So I understand your logic, right? But I have the first round the results of the first round in front of me. I want to just, the Patriots were originally slotted in for that 21st pick, right? They wound up trading back, picking at 29. I want to read the players who traded back for, right? Who basically they gave up that they could have selected from. A linebacker from Georgia, okay? A defensive back from Washington. A cornerback from Florida, Kair Elam, who's supposedly, according to Buffalo, supposed to be the next Tre'Davious White. He's supposed to be an absolute stud. You just gave up J.C. Jackson, and you got a guy sitting like that. Then two offensive guys, two legitimate first-round talents in the offensive line went off the board, an offensive lineman and a center. And then right before the Patriots picked, you had a defensive end go from Florida State, a linebacker from Utah, and another defensive tackle from Georgia. Don't forget that, national championship-winning Georgia Bulldog defense. So you missed out on some serious talent at linebacker, at cornerback, and even first-round projected talent at offensive line in order to trade back and then reach on somebody like Cole Strange. Doesn't it make more sense to use that for? And don't forget, too, they traded up on that second-round pick four spots to go after Thornton. So yep. Doesn't it make more sense to go after one of those young studs that you missed out on by trading back for and then trade up in the second rounds if you want to go grab Cole Strange?
Absolutely, it does. And how much better would you feel about this secondary right now, Justin, if the Patriots had a first-round pick at cornerback in the mix? Right, with Malcolm Butler and Jonathan Jones and Jalen Mills and
so much
the guy
better.
They sent,
so
you
much
feel
better.
So much better. You say, okay, we got a top end talent that's going to develop over the course of the year. When we go in week 13 to play Buffalo on December 1st on Thursday Night Football, this guy's going to be coming into his own. Our first round pick, and maybe he can match up with Stephon Diggs. I mean, it's exactly the point. You hit the nail on the head. That is exactly just a mismanagement of draft for assets. The guy will probably end up being, I have a feeling he's going to be a stud. I don't know why, because I feel like everyone's criticized the pick so roundly. I just feel like it's going to be one of those things. And watch, he's going to be a great player. But that's not totally the point. It really isn't. Like, they have so many needs. You can't take a third or fourth round guard or a second round guard with the 29th pick in the draft. You just can't do it when you get the kind of needs they did. Okay, you just alluded to the second round pick, Justin. To me, I'm curious what you think about this guy. To me, he reeks of Bethel Johnson. You remember Bethel Johnson?
I do, yeah. And I specifically remember after like two or three seasons after we drafted him asking you, whatever happened to Bethel Johnson? And he disappeared. Remember?
He disappeared.
Right.
Exactly. And he was just a guy with blazing straight-ahead speed. He made like two or three amazing plays a year. Couldn't be counted on week to week to be a reliable wide receiver. Can a guy in 2022 NFL, the game has changed a lot since then. Can a guy with just blazing straight ahead speed alone make it as an NFL wide receiver? That's the question I ask when I look at this pick.
Well, so it definitely seems to be one of the categories that GMs and teams are placing like the heaviest of emphasis on, right? Like you see what receivers like Tyreek Hill are commanding, like when they show blazing speed, you see some of these guys. Guys like Devontae Smith, who we questioned could even withstand hits in the NFL, but because of his speed and his elusiveness, guys like him get a shot. There definitely is a market for somebody with blazing speed and quickness.
He doesn't have quickness because he actually had the slowest like cone drill time, and I don't know. Well, how much stock are you supposed to put in that? I'm just bringing it up.
He's just gunning.
This isn't a Troy Brown. Troy Brown ran like a 4.6, 4.7 40. He had the fastest cone drill time of any wide receiver, or one of them, the year he came out. This guy is the opposite. He's got blazing straight ahead speed. He had a slow on some of those agility ones and quickness ones, he was actually middle of the pack to less.
I hope this isn't Belichick's like new Matthew Slater or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
But by the same token, I get it. Like, especially you traded up for him. But look, I get it. Like, speed is an attractive quality. But I don't know, you know, too much about him as a wide receiver other than he's supposed to be fast. I mean, like you said, apparently he's not the quickest. He's fast. He's not the quickest. How are his hands? How is route running? What do you know about that?
I don't know. We read different things. I think his hands are not great. I think they're not bad. I think they're kind of mediocre. And I don't think he had a reputation as a great route runner either. So, you know, but, you know, I don't know. Again, a player that was a third or fourth round projected pick, you traded up in the second round to get. I'm glad they bring in speed because they need it. But I just hope they're bringing in the right kind of speed, if you will. Justin, what did you think about the Patriots drafting a quarterback in the fourth round?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I mean,
the third round, I think.
What did they take? I think they took him in
either three or four, but they drafted him mid round. What do you think?
Right. I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. I don't think it says anything about Mac Jones. I think that's one of those situations where they thought they saw the best player available at that, you know, at that point in the draft, and they took him. Like, this kid's supposed to be highly decorated, you know, and highly touted coming out of college. He's supposed to, you know, be talented. So I don't think it can hurt having another young gun. And I'm not saying he's going to, but, you know, what if he turned out to be a stud and he was better than Mac Jones, right? I mean, I don't know. I guess you need a backup.
You need a backup, right?
Right.
I mean, clearly they didn't have any faith in Jarrett Stidham, so they needed to bring someone in to develop as a backup.
But interestingly enough, the former offensive coordinator did, which is weird,
I know,
right?
I know. Well, that's interesting. I mean, let's save the Stidham stuff for a minute because I want to get into that. You know, but I think that clearly they felt like they needed a backup quarterback. Stidham had lost. They never had faith in Stidham for some reason, and it's hard to. I guess we can talk about it now. I mean, it's hard to understand why they didn't give him a chance in 2020. I think that it would have benefited. Not just the player, but certainly the franchise, because, you know, if Mac Jones got hurt in week 12 last year, Stidham was going to be your guy. It would have been nice if he had had some actual experience, you know, playing the position at the NFL level. They did not like Jarrett Stidham for some reason. He did something, or there was something he showed them that, I mean, clearly, because they stuck with Cam Newton, who is god awful. And will be god-awful and was god-awful, and it clearly lost it by the time he got to New England. And even then, they couldn't manage to give Stidham, you know, a shot. So there was something dynamic there between Belichick and Stidham that was, you know, very, very, very complicated, and Belichick just clearly didn't like him. But I think, to me, I don't think the Bailey Zapp pick is in any way a reflection on Mac Jones. And I said this before the Stidham trade even happened. I just think, hey, look, they did not like Jarrett Stidham. They need a backup quarterback. What about, we talk about this a little bit. What did you like about the draft, if anything? I'll tell you one thing I liked about this draft, and even though I complained about Tyquan Johnson, I believe his name is. Tyquan Thornton, the second round pick. I like that they added speed in a lot of places in this draft because they needed it. And I'm going to give you three names. I think three of their best picks in this draft were in the middle rounds. I love the two cornerbacks they took in the third round, in the fourth round. The guy, Marcus Jones and Jack Jones from Kansas and Arizona State. Fast guys. This guy, Jack Jones, the fourth round guy at Arizona State, he was a first round talent. He had some off the field problems as a young guy. Kind of bounce around a couple different colleges. That's a great guy to take a chance on in the first round. He's 23, 24 years old. He made a few bad mistakes when he was 18, 19. I mean, God, how many people do you know that did something stupid when they were 18 years old, right? And they matured and were able to have success later in life. Like, giving this guy a chance with the kind of talent he has, that was a great pick, and I'll give him credit for it. Marcus Jones, a little undersized, they say. What I like about Marcus Jones, Justin, is he can return kicks. And they need kick returners. They need punt returners. I am so damn tired of watching Brandon Bolden, and I know he's not on the team anymore, return kicks for this team. They haven't had speed in their kickoff game. I can't remember when. So I'm glad they got him. And then their best pick in this draft might be the running back from North Dakota State, Pierre Strong, because they don't have a running back that can catch the ball besides James White, who's almost 30, coming off a hip injury. I love James White. I'm not sure what they're going to get from him this year. They needed a young, fast running back that can actually catch a football, block a little, come in on third downs, and give them an option, a la Darren Sproles, a la, you know, that kind of mold. This guy fits that mold. And I'm glad that they brought in someone like him. I think he'll be successful.
Yeah, no, that was definitely an element of the game that they were missing last year. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I'm not totally giving up on James White just yet. Just yet, I got to see how he plays. But
no, neither am I.
You know,
but he's not a speed guy either at this point.
No, and you do have Ty Montgomery too back there. Don't forget. Well, I think we're, you know, I don't want to forget about him. I think he fits into that role very nicely.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Montgomery might turn into something, but I feel like this guy is going to come in and he's going to make an impact relatively early on. You know, as long as he hold on to the football, that's the big thing. But you know, I just feel like this guy's going to be a playmaker for them. And these are the kind of guys that I like to see them take. You know, quick playmakers. You know, maybe a little undersized, worth a shot on him. One more thing about the draft, Justin, and then we're going to move on to the schedule a little bit. What was your take? What were your thoughts on Matt Groh speaking so much publicly? I thought it was very unusual. When was the last time a Patriots executive answered those kind of questions with that kind of depth and that kind of complexity and that kind of, you know, saying so much in a public forum? It's never been done before.
So I actually didn't hear these comments. If you enlighten me, if you will.
He just talked very publicly about the draft picks and, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of the players and what he liked, what he didn't like. And it was very different than how Belichick typically, you know, does his post-draft kind of engagement with the media. And I just thought it was very unique. I don't know, just making the observation. It makes me wonder if there is a little bit of a cultural change in the Patriots front office, if maybe Belichick's influence is decreasing a little bit, because, you know, this was not the Bill Belichick way. What Matt Groh did and the way that he spoke after the draft, and Groh's kind of a dry guy. Don't get me wrong. He's not like he's Mr. Charisma, a personality, but the fact that he was even out there facing questions, speaking in detail, specifics about players, so different than the way Patriots typically do things. I can't help but wonder if this was really a statement of how things are running in that organization.
Easily could be. I wonder. You know, I wonder if they were happy with the picks. I wonder if they sat back as an organization and looked at what Belichick and those guys did on draft night, and I wonder if they were a little frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard rumors that, and these are just rumors, of course, that Belichick made the first pick, and the rest of the picks Groh made. I don't know if that's true. I think there is some indicators that maybe Belichick is not the total be all and end all that he once was 5 years ago. And you know what? To that, Justin, I say that's probably a good thing. It's probably a good thing. It's probably time, you know, to get some other voices involved. Okay, let's talk a little about the schedule. You know, we've all seen the schedule. It came out last Thursday night, and I had a couple observations about it. I'm going to ask you a couple questions about it. Do you agree with me? I know you had said that there's only a few surefire wins on that schedule. But see, I look at it too, and I'm just being honest. You know, I've been somewhat pessimistic about the situation here. But when I see the schedule, I'd say there's only two games that I'd say are unwinnable or near unwinnable. And one of those I'm even questioning. Do you think this schedule makes you more optimistic or pessimistic about the Patriots? Because I got to say, for me, it actually made me a little more optimistic just to see it all laid out. I mean, maybe that's crazy and contradictory, but that's really how I felt.
So I'm not going to lie. I got the exact opposite feeling, right?
Yeah.
So I look at this schedule, and even with a rookie, Kenny Pickett, or a Mitch Trubisky, that's still a tough Steelers team, right? You open up in Miami, who's beaten us the last, what, is it like three times they've played us? Something like that, right? Something crazy.
Yep.
You open up against Miami, then you go on the road to Pittsburgh. You got to play the Ravens, who, when healthy, I personally think are the best team in that division. You then got to go to Lambeau and play Aaron Rodgers. Who else you got? You got your divisional games are now exponentially tougher. The Bills are still the Bills. I think Miami is a better team, and the Jets are clearly a better team. You know, we'll see if all that talent comes to fruition. But you don't have two easy gimme wins against the Jets anymore. I mean, I think you're going to beat the Bears. I do still think you will at least beat the Jets once, if not both games. But those are some tough games. Miami's two tough games. Buffalo's two tough games. The Bengals, tough game. Arizona, tough game. In Las Vegas, tough game. Indianapolis, tough game. In Cleveland, tough game. In Lambeau, tough game. In Heinz Field, tough game. Yeah, the Ravens, I think that's a lot of tough games. I don't know, man. I'm looking at the Patriots.
This is my take, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, number one, it sounds like you don't agree with me, but I think the kryptonite that the Miami Dolphins have had over the Patriots the last few years is gone. Okay. Brian Flores is gone. The Dolphins beat the Patriots because Brian Flores understands Bill Belichick.
But
that's why.
I think the Dolphins might just be a better team than us right now, talent wise.
I don't think they are. I think their coach, you're getting the first coach in his first game against Bill Belichick in their stadium. That should be a game that they want to win. I think that they're coming up here much later in the year. I think they're coming up here on New Year's Day, if I'm not mistaken. They're not going to win up here on New Year's Day. The Patriots are going to sweep the Dolphins this year. Okay, this coach that they hired, he's not ready to be a head coach. He's not fit to be a head coach, and he's in way over his head. Brian Flores was the glue that held that organization together. He was a terrific head coach that was taking a mediocre or sub-mediocre team and quarterback and having them play to at least a respectable level, right from day one. Because remember how pathetic that Miami team was Flores' first year, and they started off like 0-something. By the end of that year, he had them respectable. They beat the Patriots in Foxborough in January, stole our bye. Okay, Flores was a terrific coach. The Dolphins are a lousy organization. Stephen Ross is an idiot, okay? He doesn't know how to run a football team. And they made the biggest mistake I think they've made in a long time by getting rid of Brian Flores, and it is going to show this year. The Patriots, I see the Patriots winning both those games. Okay, I agree with you. Pittsburgh is never going to be an easy game. You're getting them in week two with whoever's going to be playing quarterback. I have zero respect for Mitchell Trubisky as a quarterback. Okay, and if you're getting Kenny Pickett, you know, let's not assume that just because Mac Jones was good right from day one that Kenny Pickett will be too, because we don't know that. And you're getting a rookie quarterback in his second game. I think this team starts off 2-0. I think that they get Baltimore at home, a team that didn't make the playoffs last year, a team that they've always played well against. It's always a 50-50 game, but I think in their home opener, they're going to have a realistic shot to beat that team. And they're getting Green Bay early in the year when they're still going to be going through their process, bringing a whole bunch of new wide receivers. That's a tough game. I think that is one of the two games on the schedule that I say that's going to be a tough game to win. But I'd rather have them in week 4 than week 12. Okay, you get Detroit and Chicago at home. The Jets still suck. Okay. I think this team is going to be 6-2, 5-2, 7-2, something like that, before they really get to the meat of their schedule. I really do. And I think even games like, look, Arizona's good. Patriots beat them with Cam Newton 2 years ago. They're not a juggernaut. Minnesota, that's a tough game on Thanksgiving night. Kirk Cousins, Patriots can beat that team. You know, Cleveland, getting them in week 6, that's better than getting them in week 16. You know, that's going to be still a process for them. I don't see many games. I agree with you. There aren't many cupcakes on their schedule. I think there's more than you're giving credit for, because I think you're putting way too much stock in Miami and the Jets. But there's not many games on the schedule that I think are like surefire losses. And the only two I'd say is probably at Green Bay and at Buffalo, which is the last week of the year. And who knows? You know, maybe you get another blizzard.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, though. Look, I just think there's a lot of tough games. I do. I think in in Las Vegas is going to be a tough game. I think in Arizona is going to be a tough game. I think in Cincinnati, or even hosting Cincinnati is going to be a tough game. I mean, are you going to have this? Are you going to have the pass rush to disrupt Joe Burrow? And if you don't, I definitely don't know if you got the secondary to slow that offense down. Even without the Dolphins and the Jets, I mean, you still got some tough games. Like, Kenny Pickett could be a stud, right? Like, that team is – we like saying that the Steelers are virtually a plug-and-play quarterback away from being a contender. Kenny Pickett could be good.
But I'll take my chances against a rookie quarterback in his second game because 80% of them, you know, for every one Mac Jones – who comes in and is viable from day one, there's going to be four Zach Wilsons. So I'll take my chances, you know, and if Pickett ends up beating them, if this team can't beat Kenny Pickett, Justin, I don't care where the game is being played. If they can't beat Kenny Pickett in his second game, they're not going anywhere anyways.
Well, I just don't know if this, what's this defense? Like, what are they hinging themselves on? Like, where are we getting our stops from? Like, what are the strengths of, are we going to be getting to the quarterback and disrupting, you know, the backfield? Are we going to be playing lockdown, you know, airtight coverage in the secondary? Like, we don't have a bunch of, you know, fast, athletic linebackers that are versatile. Like, where is this competitive fight going to come from with these Patriots?
I agree, Justin. I mean, like I said, there's questions on the defense. I just think that, you know, I just don't see a lot of games, is I guess my point, that are unwinnable games on this schedule. You know, I really don't. And I think that this team is going to have to come out and play well. And Mac Jones is going to have to take a big step forward. And I think he's capable of doing that. And if he does that, this team will win 12 games this year. If he doesn't take a big step forward, or he's kind of the same guy we saw last year, they're going to be a middling team this year. They're going to be a 7-8-win team, without question.
That's
where they are. So it all comes down to Mac. I mean, that's just it. It's a quarterback-driven league. He's our guy. He showed flashes last year. He's going to have better weapons this year. I hope he has better pass protection this year. And he's going to have to go out and win games because you're right. There are holes on this team. But every other one of those teams, you know, Arizona Cardinals have holes. Minnesota Vikings have holes. No, they're not playing the 92 Cowboys. You know what I mean? Every single team they got has holes. I mean, that's the nature of the game right now. And if Mac can be, you know, that guy, then they're going to win games. And if he isn't, then it's going to be a middling kind of year for sure, because they don't have that kind of roster that can make up for a mediocre or above average quarterback. They don't have that this year.
Yeah, no, and I will say, so Vegas, Vegas puts their over under at 8.5, right down the middle, 50-50.
Yep.
So, yep. I mean, look, I could, you know, if things break their way and some of these teams in the schedule don't pan out and these Patriots are maybe a little better than we expected, I definitely see their path to 10, 11, 12 wins. If some of these teams are better than we thought and the holes in this Patriots team start rearing their head, I could easily see them being, you know, a 5-6-7 win team.
Yeah. And you know, Justin, if it doesn't work this year, especially if Jones regresses, it's time to move on from Belichick. I've said that before, and I'll say it again. I mean, this is a referendum on Belichick and a lot that he's done. This will be his third year post Brady. I mean, in the NFL in 2022, that's a long time. Okay. Most coaches, when they get hired, are getting 2 or 3 years to build a team. So if at the end of the third year, you're 6-11 team, you know, and at the first year you were 7-9 team, and you're no closer to being a legitimate contender than you were, and you still got holes up and down the roster, you know, it is time to move on, in my opinion. Okay, one last couple more quick questions for you, then we'll wrap it up. Okay, dust is settled, the off season's more or less over, right? I mean, there might be a few things that happen here. What was the biggest mistake made by any team this offseason?
Wow, the biggest mistake made by any team this offseason, huh? That's tough. That's tough. Let me think for a second. Who is yours?
I'm going to give you two while you're thinking. Okay. Okay, one of them I already mentioned. Getting rid of Brian Flores was so stupid. The Dolphins are just such a dysfunctional, stupid franchise, and it's why they don't win. It's not an accident. It starts with the owner, and it trickles all the way down throughout the organization. You have a smart, great young coach who, oh, by the way, happens to own the kryptonite to your biggest division rival for the last 20 years and has beaten them 3 out of 4 times that you've played them, and twice last year, and you fire that guy? You have to be out of your mind. He's taking your lousy, below average, mediocre team and made them respectable, borderline playoff team with a crappy quarterback, and you get rid of him. I mean, I thought that was a terrible, terrible move. And you bring in this guy that is just so over his head, and I just does not strike me. Like, we talked about this before. I think about the guy, maybe it was in Philadelphia. This guy in Miami, he does not strike me as a man, as a leader of men that can go into an NFL locker room filled with alpha males, okay, and command presence and get these guys to play for him, okay? He strikes me more as a guy that's like sending thank you cards to people. Or, you know, I mean, I just don't see it. So I think that was a huge, huge screw up, and it'll benefit the Patriots. The Patriots will beat the Dolphins twice this year. I'll say it right now. And then number two, biggest mistake, the Giants sticking with Daniel Jones. What more do you need to see?
Yeah.
You know, I know that a lot of this falls to Joe Judge. Fine. If you are a great quarterback, it doesn't matter who the coach is. Okay. Peyton Manning made Jim Mora a good coach. Okay. You know, I mean, really, if you have a really true franchise quarterback, he's going to look like a franchise quarterback no matter what is around him. Maybe not to his full potential. Okay, understood. But you're going to see enough from him that you know there's something there. Daniel Jones showed you next to nothing. What do the Giants need to see from him? It was 3 years. It's time to move on. Wasting another year with him. The only logic I can think to it is that next year's quarterback draft is going to be strong, and they probably felt like they weren't going to get anyone better this year anyway, so might as well take another shot.
Yeah. No, I know. That's those are two great picks. While you're thinking, I think – two things that, you know, come to my mind real quick. I think the Dolphins legitimately, you know, not going off of the Brian Flores thing, I think they doubled down on this screw up by giving away precious draft capital and assets that they had strategically accumulated during the Flores tenure, and blowing it all on somebody like Tyreek Hill, who is just going to show up to Miami with his bag of cash and just go through the motions for the next 4 years. I think that is a move that's really going to hinder that organization's progress. It might make them better today than they were before they made the trade, adding someone like Tyreek Hill to that offense. But in the long run, I think that definitely hurts your organization.
Well, it was a huge investment in Tua as a quarterback, because if they don't make that Tyreek Hill trade – and they hang on to draft capital, because I think they traded some future picks, right, to get Tyreek Hill, quite a few. And next year's quarterback draft is supposed to be strong. So they could have drafted someone next year or traded up to get someone, you know. But
right.
Instead, they bring in a weapon for Tua.
Right. And another team, I think, real quick, that I don't love what they did, and that's partly because – of who they replaced, which is somebody that I think the two of us have both defended, you know, a little bit on this podcast and said they haven't gotten a fair shake. And that's what the Browns did with trading the absolute bag for Deshaun Watson and ousting Baker Mayfield, right? Like, I think in reality, you gave up a ton of assets. You're paying him, you know, a good amount of money. And realistically, I don't know how big of an upgrade you got at the position. I think Baker got an unfair shake, and I think what you gave up did not match the added value that was brought to your organization.
Justin, that is such a great take. And, you know, I love Deshaun Watson as a player. I'm not sure his resume is all that much better than Baker Mayfield's in terms of actual production, which I thought it was still about. And they traded a ton of capital to bring in Deshaun Watson. I mean, they are literally hamstrung as a franchise in terms of salary cap. I mean, they're paying him more than any quarterback's ever gotten in the NFL,
right,
and
right.
And draft assets. They gave him a tremendous ransom,
right,
for to give up a guy who was the number one pick in Baker Mayfield, led them to the playoffs, and they beat the crap out of the Steelers. Everyone forgets that so quickly. Mayfield had a bum shoulder last year. I'm no
he had a bum everything last year. He was a
bum everything. I'm no huge Mayfield guy, but is the delta between Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield that huge? I think that's a great take. I really do. Like, everyone's so gaga about this Watson move. And that's the other thing. The Browns are on the Patriots schedule in week six. I'm not totally sold that that whole thing is going to work out there. I have a tremendous amount of skepticism on that. So, you know, I look at that as a winnable game. I'm not saying it's a sure thing, but I look at that as a winnable game. I don't think the Browns are going to be 13-4 this year or something like that. I just don't see it. They have to prove it first. To me, it's still, you know, it's not that big of a difference. So you're right. It's a great take.
Yeah, no, that I guess those would be my two. But yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting year, man. A very interesting year. And I know we said that last year, but this year, I there's just a lot of shakeup, right? There's a lot of shakeup. There's a lot I think that we're waiting to see play out. And I think, especially now in the AFC, we're going to see a lot of good teams miss out on the chance to play come December. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's going to be a great year. You know, I think it will be interesting right from the get-go from training camp for the Patriots, just with all the new players they have, moving parts, watching Mac Jones' development. It will be a fun August and September and October, you know, and hopefully it'll be a fun November and December too. I mean, that's kind of, you know, it could be done early. I mean, we don't know. So it's going to be interesting to play out. And, you know, I'm skeptical. I think you're skeptical. You know, we'll see what happens with this team. You know, I will happily eat my words if I'm wrong about what I've said about Bill Belichick. If you've listened to this podcast and you've heard me be skeptical of Belichick, I want to be wrong. I want Belichick to rub it in the face of people that are questioning him right now, including myself. You know, I really do. Like, I want Belichick to be proven right. I want him to be the man. I want him to coach till he's 80 and win 3 Super Bowls with Mac Jones. You know, that's really what I want. So this is such a critical year for this franchise, because I don't know if the Crafts will actually fire Belichick after this year if things don't go well. But I know one thing, they'll be thinking about it because it wouldn't be unreasonable.
Yeah, you know, I especially the way with things ended here with Tom. You know, we looked at arguably one of the greatest runs that any organization in any sport has ever had, and there were, you know, two people primarily responsible for that. Obviously you can say Robert Kraft, but you know, it was Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, right? Things clearly didn't end the way we wanted it to here for Tom in New England, right? I think we can all agree on that. It would really suck if the other half of that, you know, equation kind of left in just the worst terms. You know, wouldn't it just be awful if both of our, you know, our godsends kind of just left in a terrible manner, and we just disappeared into this, you know, this decayed franchise?
No, but it goes back to my opening take, Justin. Right. Nothing lasts forever. If it was working, then it wouldn't end. And it worked here for an amazing amount of time, 20 years, which is just incomparable to anything else that's ever happened in pro sports. So yeah, it was going to end. It stopped working with Brady. It ended, and it ended ugly. That's how it goes. And now it's probably going to happen again with Belichick, you know, unless things change in the next year or two. That's how it goes. You know, I mean, we have great ownership in New England. I think Jonathan Kraft is a great owner. I think he will be a great owner when Mr. Kraft hands him the keys to the franchise. And this is a great franchise. It's going to continue to be a great franchise. And one way or another, I think, you know, it's going to be good to be a Patriots fan. And oh, by the way, they have a good young quarterback, which is a good thing for, you know, that most franchises can't say. So, you know, it's a critical time. It's a critical time, and we'll see what direction it goes this year. I'm not sure when we're going to record again. It will depend on how much news we have, right? Because it's really a dry time of the year. So hopefully we can muster up and scrap up enough stuff to maybe record again in about a month for our fans out there that are listening, and just kind of hit it with monthly episodes until the preseason starts, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the more you hear us, that means the closer football is, and I think we're all looking forward to that. So the summer's going to go
by.
We'll definitely be back weekly.
We'll be back weekly and starting right from the, I don't know, sometime in the preseason, just like last year.
Oh, yeah.
Hitting it up weekly. Now is the time to rest, take out the boat, go for a swim, you know, go for a walk, enjoy the good weather.
I know. It's only going to be a matter of time before, you know, you're checking your fantasy apps almost every friggin' minute and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, it's the calm before the storm. Enjoy a little bit of the
summer. Yeah, and checking your Hedge Better app too, right?
Yes, yes, sir. Hopefully, yeah, coming at some point in 2023. We have plans to have it finished, built, and developed. Hopefully wrapping up end of 2022, beginning of 2023. And then we will see what happens from there.
All right, man. Well, I'm excited. Listen, everyone, want to say thank you to everyone that listened. We are going to wrap this up, and we will talk to you all soon. Enjoy the Celtics. Enjoy the NBA, what's left of the NHL playoffs. And be ready, because football season is fast approaching. Enjoy the summer, everyone. Have a great week.
Take it easy.